You don't need special gadgets to be a hero. With unlimited 1.5% cash back on every purchase everywhere, the Capital One Quicksilver Card makes you the hero of every purchase. Whether it's headphones, a lounge chair, or even a well-deserved massage, whatever the Quicksilver purchase, you're the hero. No fighting bad guys, getting in epic car chases, or parachuting out of buildings required. Simple, isn't it? The Capital One Quicksilver Card. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Hey, and welcome to the Short Stuff. I'm Josh, and there's Chuck, just a couple of mellow dudes about to talk about one of the worst public health disasters in American history. All right.
That's right. And this one came about because we were just talking about this in a full-length episode. Mm-hmm. And little Joshy said, hey, we should do a Short Stuff on that thing. And bada bing, bada boom, 2 days later, we're doing it.
Yeah. Not even 2 days. I think it's the next day in podcast land time.
Oh, sure.
I think it just came out.
Yeah, we activated our immediate response team,
mm-hmm.
which is us.
Yes.
And we're going to do one on the Elixir sulfanilamide disaster.
Okay. Sure. All right.
Well, how would you say it? Sulfanilamide?
That's what I'm going with.
All right.
Hey, man, potato, potato, sulfanilamide, sulfanilamide. Let's call the whole thing off.
Exactly.
Which, by the way, I know this is a Short Stuff, so there's really no time to discourse, but I hate that song.
The Let's Call the Whole Thing Off?
Yeah. Hate it.
Yeah, I told you, I think, one time about my friend Andrew in Los Angeles, whose friend auditioned with that song for a big musical production.
Okay.
And had never heard it really and didn't realize that you were supposed to say them differently. So you say tomato and I say tomato.
You've just seen the sheet music?
I guess so. I mean, that was awesome. The story. I don't know if it checks out, but it's pretty funny.
Sounds like an Andy Kaufman performance art piece. So we're not talking about that. We're going back to 1937, back in the time where there was such a thing as the FDA. There was something called the 1906 Food, Drug, and Cosmetics Act. No, Pure Food and Drug Act, sorry, of 1906, which we talked about yesterday. And one of the things that it did was it said, there is this thing, this Bureau of Chemistry that will become the FDA, but they're just kind of there. They're not really good at what they do yet because we don't have the regulation to let them do what they do. And so under that context, the idea of medicines was pretty much like the Wild West in America at the time.
Yes, I think that's putting it very kindly.
Yeah.
Earlier in that same decade, there was a microbiologist named Gerhard Domach and said, hey, I made a great discovery. This compound, sulfanilamide or nilamide, acts as an antibiotic against strep, and we can help strep throat. And pharmaceutical company said, this is great. Let's pump out this powder and these tablets. Mm-hmm. And then someone at the S.E. Massengill Pharmaceutical Company out of Tennessee said, you know what? People really want this in liquid form. Get to work.
Yeah, there was a guy, the chief chemist was Dr. Harold Watkins, and he started, you know, getting to work because they told him to, and that was his job, and that was that. And so he started tinkering around. He needed a solvent, something to dissolve the powdered sulfanilamide into a solution, water, because it doesn't just automatically dissolve. So he used the solvent diethylene glycol, and he ended up coming up. Yeah, just seeing that on a label somewhere, wouldn't you be like, I'm going to second guess this decision.
How about this deadly poison?
He went whole hog on it, and so he came up with Elixir sulfanilamide, which was 10% sulfanilamide, the antibiotic, 16% water, and 72% diethylene glycol.
Yeah, which gave it a lot of that.
Yeah, and it gave it a sweet flavor, so the taste was good. It gave it a pinkish hue. He added a little bit of raspberry extract and said, let's hit the market.
Yeah, and I guess I kind of spoiled it a second ago, but it is a deadly poison.
Yeah.
And as you mentioned in the other episode, it's related to antifreeze, which is not good to drink. And it kills you in horrific ways. It really wrecks your kidney. Your kidneys will eventually shut down, but along the way, you will be vomiting and agitated and have seizures and convulsions. terrible, intense pain, unrelenting pain. And they didn't know this because they didn't carry out any tests on this stuff, not just to make it, but to sell it. They didn't even test it out before they put it on the shelves, mainly because the law didn't say you had to at the time.
No, but did you see that quote about,
yeah.
about that described the Massengill company? I think even among, you know, under the law, they were kind of seen as renegades, right?
Yeah, the quote was from the investigator. Apparently, they just throw drugs together, and if they don't explode, they're placed on sale.
And that's at that time, like in the 30s, right? So the Massengill Company, they made 240 gallons initially of elixir sulfanilamide of this deadly, deadly poison and started shipping it around the country as medicine in September of 1937. And within just a couple of weeks, the first deaths were starting to be reported.
Yeah, and it wasn't like... these days where they find something like, oh, this could cause a risk of cancer down the road. Mm-hmm. Like, you drink this stuff and you die.
Yeah, yeah.
It was that really bad.
Yeah. So I say we take a break. The sulfanilamide elixir is out there. It's starting to kill people, and we need to get some commercial messages in.
Hey everybody, Chuck here. Are you thirsty? Well, before you take a sip, have you stopped to think about what's in your water? Many conventional bottled waters contain PFAS, harmful substances known as forever chemicals.
Yeah, but you can drink water as clean as nature intended with Richard's Rainwater.
That's right. Richard's Rainwater collects 100% pure, refreshing drops of rain. Yes, it really is rain. Richard's Rainwater is caught clean before it hits the ground or becomes polluted with pesticides and contaminants that are commonly found in groundwater.
And since rain is naturally pure, there's no need for harsh chemicals or additives. That means Richard's Rainwater contains no added fluoride, no chlorine, no forever chemicals, no microplastics, no nothing. Just pure drops of rain.
That's right. Enjoy the smooth, clean taste of Richard's still rainwater and the long-lasting cold pressured bubbles of Richard's sparkling rainwater. Perfect for sipping or mixing into your favorite cocktail. Just visit richardsrainwater.com to find a retailer near you. Enjoy pure, refreshing rainwater. Sip the sky. Hey, everybody. It's halftime and the scoreboard is not looking good. You're feeling low and not sure you can pull out a win. And that's when you have to dig deep, lift your head up, and say to yourself, time to get back in the game. Pull off some bank heists and take as much of your friend's money as you possibly can.
That's right. The smash hit mobile game Monopoly Go lets you compete with your friends to get the most riches and the biggest empire. It's the Monopoly you love, but on your phone, anytime, with tons of new twists, including leaderboards to compare your progress to your buddies.
That's right. You can play on countless dynamic Monopoly boards. You can make your friends bankrupt by smashing their landmarks with a wrecking ball, and you can charge other players rent for your iconic properties.
Plus, you can even work with your friends to crack open community chests and tournaments to get rewards and climb the leaderboard.
So get back out there, put on your game face, and download Monopoly Go, now free on the App Store or Google Play.
All right, so Chuck, the AMA was around at the time. It was our poison control episode. Remember we said the AMA was formed in part as a response to this idea that people were being poisoned and didn't know why. So the AMA, like, they were keeping track of sulfanilamide, but they had not heard of this S.E. Massengill stuff, and they started getting reports of people taking it and dying from it, and they wanted to get to the bottom of that toot sweet.
Yeah, so they called them up, and they said, hey, you mind just... send over that ingredient list our way. And Massengill did. And here's the thing. They didn't really realize at the time what the deal was. Like, they had to do all these. They weren't like, wait a minute. It's got diethylene glycol in it.
Yeah, there you go.
That's what's killing people. Because it was had only been around, I think, less than a decade or so. Mm-hmm. And obviously, they didn't know or they wouldn't have used that. Like, I don't think they willfully tried to kill people.
No, certainly not.
But the AMA, you know, they had to do tests and they started sort of ruling things out. And they eventually found out that, like, yeah, 70, whatever, 2% of this stuff is a deadly poison. And we need to start getting the message out to newspapers and radios and telling people this. But, you know, that's tough to do in those years.
It is, because as we'll see, the FDA sent a bunch of agents out, and they were trying to get in touch with the traveling salesmen for Massengill, who were like, you know, they didn't have cell phones. They would, you know, maybe leave a forwarding address at a hotel that you'd have to go shake down.
And yeah, you'd go on the road.
You'd go chase that down, and you'd find that they were already two cities beyond that last forwarding address. And you're doing this in the context of like this race against the clock, that there's 240 gallons of this stuff out there and people are being prescribed it. And you're trying to find this traveling salesman who can point you in the direction of where these things were shipped to.
Yeah, they also got in touch with Massengill, and they went, yeah, we know. It's killing people, and we're trying to get it back, too. We sent out these memos and on the wire and these telegrams saying that, you know, we'd like this stuff back and it could be dangerous. And then the FDA said, no, man, send different telegrams saying you have to do this. It is killing people.
Right. And they did. I mean, they complied. You get the impression that the Massengill Company was a rather reluctant partner to the FDA at the time.
I would imagine, yeah.
But they did eventually they took all the right steps that the FDA was kind of directing them to. And so the FDA sent out all those field agents, and the field agents would have trouble, you know, tracking down a salesperson. Sometimes when they got in touch with one of these salesmen, they would be worried about the company's image, so they would just not tell them who they sold these things to. And so they'd have to go through sales slips at you know, pharmacies around the country. And when they would finally get in touch with doctors and pharmacists, they'd be worried about their own legal liability, so
totally.
They wouldn't be forthcoming with any of this information, too. It must have just been really frustrating, you know?
Yeah, I mean, so you've got doctors that aren't really cooperating. Some of them did. I think there was one story that you found where a doctor actually postponed his wedding just to help find one patient whose family had moved to the mountains with his sick kid and took a bottle of that stuff along that the doctor had given him. But, you know, some were more cooperative than others. I think the FDA, they didn't have the teeth at the time that they do now.
Yeah.
And they could not force a recall of a drug. They were able to through sort of a loophole in that it was called Elixir on the label. It was labeled as such. But apparently, unless it contains alcohol, it's not an elixir. Isn't that right?
Yeah, it should have been called solution sulfanilamide. And the fact that they called it elixir meant that technically it was mislabeled. And the FDA did have the ability to seize drugs that were mislabeled under the 1906 Act. Yeah, but that was it. It was like getting Al Capone on tax evasion. They were able to get this antibiotic back on this technicality that it was misnamed, but that's what they proceeded under. And so they were able to eventually get 234 gallons in one pint of the 240 gallons that had been produced.
Yeah, a very great effort. I think in the end, 105 men, women, and kids were killed, I think. Or was it? That's total, right?
Yeah, 71 adults and 34 kids.
Okay. And they said if that loophole hadn't existed, that amount of liquid would have ended up killing about 4,000 people.
Yeah. And I mean, depending on how they were prescribed, how much they were prescribed, some of them died in 2 days. Some of them took 3 weeks to die, and they all died agonizing deaths. But the idea that, you know, thousands more people could have died had the FDA not been able to do something about it is pretty. You know, he's got to wipe your forehead with that one.
Yeah. Dr. Harold Watkins, that we mentioned, the Massengill chief chemist, he took his own life. Very sadly, there was a lot of survivor's guilt. A lot of physicians, as well as people that worked at Massengill, were just wrecked with guilt afterward for a long time. One of the doctors from Mount Olive wrote to the president, to FDR, and said, please pass some more oversight measures over medicines, because 6 of my patients, including my best friend, are now dead because of what I gave them.
Yeah, that doctor, I have to give a shout out, is quoted in a 1981 FDA Consumer Magazine article with the title, Taste of Raspberries, Taste of Death.
Colon?
No joke. That's it.
No colon?
No colon, comma instead.
All right. It should have been colon, the rise and fall of the deadly elixir.
Right.
Colon.
There was another death related to it too, Chuck. Remember how we were you said that the FDA just didn't have the teeth to enforce this. Well, they got the teeth. There had been legislation kicking around in Washington to update that 1906 Act. And when this happened, you know, the public outcry was so much that it helped dislodge it and get it passed. But it was under the championship of Senator Royal Copeland of New York, who sponsored that bill. And he dropped dead of exhaustion 4 days after it was passed.
Whenever I see that, I think, and what else?
Yeah.
Like, how many packs of cigarettes did he smoke?
I think there was a what else for sure, but, you know, I mean, like, yeah. I think there was some truth to it.
No, I believe.
Agreed, though. I think that's wise to take diet of exhaustion as a grain of salt.
Agreed.
You got anything else?
How much salt did he eat?
You can die from salt. Just it has nothing to do with exhaustion.
I got nothing else. Good one. Promise kept.
Yes, fulfilled. The next day, even. And since we're done, everybody, that means short stuff is out.
Stuff You Should Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.